Hello, it's Scott Manley here. It's January 12, 2026, and after a very busy Christmas season and a record-breaking 2025, it's time to get back to the deep space updates. Yes, SpaceX may have been launching Starlink all through 2025, but they didn't have any more Starlink launches before the end of the year. This year, we've had three launches from Slick 40. January 4th, we also had the debut of a new Falcon 9 booster, number 1101, and we also had launches on the 9th and 12th. But yeah, rewinding a little to immediately after the release of my previous video, we had over in India on December 24th, the Indian Space Research Organization, using their LVM Mark III rocket, launched a satellite for AST Space Mobile, Bluebird 6. This is basically their cell phone antenna, you know, direct-to-cell capable spacecraft, which is the largest commercial phased array of any satellite, as far as I know, in low Earth orbit. There might be something up higher up that's bigger. This is supposed to give us direct-to-cell connectivity for 4G, 5G. It's actually also the heaviest payload ever launched by LVM3, which was, of course, previously known as the GSLV3. This is, of course, since this is launching to low Earth orbit, it's able to launch much heavier mass. So, yeah. It was delayed earlier in the month, but it looks like, you know, they eventually got it out on Christmas Eve, and it seems to have been a happy launch all around. December 26th, after Christmas, China Long March 3B was launched from Xichang, carrying the Fengyang 4C satellite into geostationary Earth orbit. This is a meteorological satellite for weather monitoring. It will actually replace the previous Fengyang 4A satellite. And this basically provides weather services for Asia Pacific using, you know, multispectral imaging, and it does atmospheric sounding, etc., etc. So, December 28th, in Russia, we had a Soyuz 2.1B and a Fregat-M ferry stage launched from Vostochny, carrying AIST-2T plus some other satellites, a bunch of like 50 rideshare satellites, including Zafar and Kosar-1-5. So these were AIST, you know, 2T-1 and 2 are a pair of Earth observation satellites for stereo imaging, right? So this produces, you know, high resolution images with the satellites separated apart so that they can actually produce these like stereoscopic images and produce depth. It has like 1.2 meter imaging. This launch also included some payloads for Iran, number of small satellites, and, you know, not sure if there's any of those have been successful or not, but, you know, yeah, that was the final launch from Russia in 2025. December 30th, in China, we had two launches. There was first a Long March 4B launching from Jichuan, carrying the Tianhui satellite into a 485-kilometer sun-synchronous orbit. This is believed to be a sensing, you know, mapping satellite for geographic surveys, land resources, scientific research. It's very likely got a dual civilian military use. And also on December 30th was a Long March 7A launching from Wenchang, carrying the Shijian 29A and 29B into geostationary orbit, or at least geostationary transfer orbit. So again, this is a pair of experimental satellites for space environment monitoring, target detection, etc. This is a technology verification payload. Typically, the Shijian satellites do all sorts of clever stuff, generally testing new technologies for China's military. It was the final launch of China's year. I believe that had something like 90-odd missions. Distant second, well, not so much a distant second to SpaceX, but they are the entire nation of China is the only thing that comes close to SpaceX in terms of total number of launches. And of course, SpaceX are vastly leading the way in 2025 in terms of the mass of hardware launch, since they are maxing out their Falcon 9s on every launch, or many launches, for Starlink. But getting over into the new year, 2026, we had been waiting for Cosmos SkyMed. We thought that SpaceX would get one last launch in. They were ready to go. The skies were beautiful and clear up here. I was expecting a beautiful twilight launch, and they cancelled it. And then the storm clouds rolled in, and by the time January 3rd was around, it was impossible for me to see anything here. I was under a blanket of rain. But yes, Falcon obviously launched out of Vandenberg, Slick 4 carrying Cosmos SkyMed second generation payload into Sun synchronous orbit. This is a synthetic aperture radar satellite for, I believe, Italy. It's, again, it has a dual civilian military use, very likely. It's the third in that constellation. But yeah, it was unfortunate it was delayed. There was also a return to launch site landing as well there. January 11th, again from Vandenberg. This time, the weather was clear. So this was called a mission called Twilight. This is a day-night Terminator launch in the opposite direction to the Cosmos SkyMed launch. Again, out of Slick 4C, but this one launched around 5:40 a.m. or thereabouts. I'm not sure the exact time. But I knew this was happening. I was expecting to see something cool. I knew that it was too early to actually launch up into the sun. But I did know that this launch, because it was just before sunrise, it would leave a bunch of rocket exhaust, which would fall back into the upper atmosphere and generate very high altitude clouds, known as noctilucent clouds. And I got some really cool shots of this. So yeah, the mission itself, by the way, which I've completely forgot to talk about, this is a rideshare mission into this very specific day-night Terminator orbit. This is, by the way, the same orbit that everyone's talking about putting space data centers in. So there's something like 37 spacecraft on it. The most important one, or the most talked about one, is a spacecraft called Pandora, which is a 1.5 foot, 45 centimeter aperture telescope, which is going to look at exoplanets to see if they have hydrogen or water dominated atmospheres. And this, yeah, it's a relatively large mirror in it. But the sensor on it is interesting because it's actually a flight spare for the James Webb Space Telescope NIR cam. So they basically, they had a flight spare, they've launched the telescope, let's build another mission around it. And that was launched again with a whole bunch of other satellites, some like 36 others, including Hawkeye 360, signals intelligence satellite, synthetic aperture radar satellites for ICEYE, Capella, Umbra, and many others. Finally, just earlier today, we had another Indian launch, the PSLV-DL launch, the two booster version of the Polar Satellite Launch Vehicle, going into Sun synchronous orbit. It was supposed to be a rideshare mission carrying 19 satellites, primarily from India, but there were a lot from Brazil. And unfortunately, this launch failed to reach orbit. So the launch was perfect early on. Third stage was going well, and then towards the end of the burn, it began to lose control, apparently, spun out, and of course the fourth stage was pointed the wrong way. Now, we don't know exactly what happened. The official statement from the guy in charge of ISRO hasn't given us any more details, but we've seen displays in the control room that showed when things went wrong. We've seen, screen captures of the satellite camera or the launch vehicle camera pointing the wrong direction. That's unfortunate because this was actually a return to flight for the PSLV. The previous mission also had a third stage failure. So that's two in a row, and that's the last launch was in May of last year. So they spent 6 months trying to figure out what went wrong, and something else went wrong, so they're back to the drawing board. Based upon the telemetry, Jonathan McDowell did some math, and he reckons that it made it to about 18 degrees south before descending into the ocean and burning up in the process. Now, this was obviously not a great day for any of those payloads, but it turns out that one payload did actually survive and transmitted data. Orbital Paradigm have a spacecraft called the KID. It's a re-entry capsule, and they collected data from it as it was screaming through the atmosphere. Now, initially it entered, still attached to the upper stage, it entered at a steeper descent angle. Eventually it broke free as the forces of re-entry and the heating broke it off. And the data they have shows that it was actually a pretty good trajectory. It survived. Unfortunately, they didn't get the customer data out because that was supposed to be transmitted much later and essentially ran out of altitude before the timer expired. And so now with the launches dealt with, we get on to the rest of the news. And the massive bombshell that was dropped the day after Christmas was that Tory Bruno, who had just quit ULA, was moving to Blue Origin. He was going to join Blue Origin in charge of national security focus. This is a huge blow to ULA, I imagine, which for many years, of course, was the go-to launch provider for, you know, US government launches. And they've lost out on that now to SpaceX. And now their CEO is basically moved in and is going to be using all his great contacts and knowledge of government contracting to try to get some of that business for Blue Origin. And, you know, that really is just, boy, that's hard. It must be hard for anyone that's working at ULA right now. You know, it's been an unfortunate number of years where, Boeing and Lockheed, the people that run ULA, have not really wanted to take the company in a direction which would make them viable in the long term. So it's sort of decayed. They tried to sell the company. It hasn't really worked. So yeah, anyway. And the big news on the space station is, of course, the medical emergency. I've got a whole other video about it. The information that we have now hasn't really changed very much, but we know now that the crew are definitely coming home. We know that they are coming home, undocking on Wednesday afternoon and re-entering on Wednesday night, Thursday morning. If you're in California, it looks like if they hit their like planned window, they will be re-entering down the California coast at about 12:30 a.m. Wednesday night, Thursday morning. So that'll be something to look for if you want to spot that kind of thing. We still don't know who is actually sick. We don't know what the medical issue is. The only clue that has come out is a blog entry which named the activities yesterday of three of the four crew members, with one crew member notably absent. But we also had a crew change of command ceremony in the ISS where Michael Fink passed off command to his Russian counterpart. Everyone was there. Nobody looked particularly sick, but I'm sure there's some doctors there that will be able to give us some other clues. I'm not going to speculate at this point. I'm just happy that they're coming home. We've also heard that Crew 12 are going to be planning an extra long flight. So I guess they're, because the supplies are going to be up there, they're going to handle more of the tasks that were planned for Crew 11. So they're going to get an extended stay on the station, unless, of course, one of them gets sick. This video is brought to you with the help of Surfshark. What they offer is a VPN solution for everyone. VPN is an acronym for Virtual Private Network, and that means instead of connecting to the internet over that dodgy hotel Wi-Fi, you're connecting through their servers with the first hop over that very public internet being encrypted. When I'm traveling, more security is always nice. What I find extremely useful, though, is the ability to switch where my internet traffic is routed. Surfshark has endpoints all over the world, so you can make your internet activity look like it's coming from another country. And I am constantly looking for details on spaceflight around the world, and just sometimes I run into regional restrictions that stop people in one country from accessing internet in another country. So for me, it's a useful tool that helps me get information which might otherwise be blocked. It can help me tell stories, and even if you're not a hardcore rocket nerd, I am sure you've all encountered some regional content limitations at one point or another. So Surfshark offers me a way to keep up with things I might not otherwise see. The service has been fast and reliable for me, and it's easy to use. I mean, you can believe me when I say that it is not rocket science. It's been trivial to set up on every platform I've tried. The service comes with some other useful features, such as an internet search engine, which doesn't have the top results hidden behind paid results and dubious AI-generated answers. And if you try it and you don't need it, they offer a 30-day money-back guarantee. So go to surfshark.com, the URL is on the screen, and when you're checking out, use the code MANLY. That will give you 4 extra months of Surfshark VPN. Now, back to the video. The other news that happened in late December, which is massively important to NASA, is that Congress got around to creating a minibus appropriations bill, which addresses some of the massive NASA funding shortcomings. So it now looks that if this bill is passed, NASA is going to get about $24 billion for 2026. And that pretty much rejects the steep cuts proposed by the current administration, restoring funding for almost all of the programs like Artemis, the science missions, and everything else. However, one thing which is definitely not being renewed is the current plan for Mars sample return. So we don't know what's going to happen to those samples that are on the surface of the Mars, collected by Perseverance, but it's increasingly likely that China is going to beat the US to a Mars sample return unless something else happens. In Florida, on January 1st, a New Year surprise came in the form of a specialized barge being seen carrying some test payload, which was suspiciously large, like similar in mass to that of a starship. So yeah, Julia Bergeron saw this and started posting it to the internet. It's a standard Marmac transport barge. And it turns out that Kiki Donchev responded, basically confirming that this is going to be used or planned to be used by SpaceX to transport the boosters and the starships from Boca Chica up to Florida. He's also confirmed, by the way, that the spacecraft, the boosters, will be placed on their side. They're not going to ride straight up and down. And by the way, his Twitter handle is Turkey Beaver, so if you're looking for him. In Alabama, at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center, there were explosions this weekend at historic test stands. Unfortunately, this wasn't because of rockets exploding on them. It was because these test stands were too old, and despite their historic status, they were far too dangerous, and so they were being destroyed by controlled demolition so that they could be replaced by new modern technology. So yeah, these are like the old propulsion structural test facility and the dynamic test facility. These were huge things built in the 1950s and 60s where they could test whole rockets. In fact, the dynamic test facility enabled them to fully test a fully assembled Saturn V, and that was where they also performed the first complete space shuttle stack. Now, these stands have been around for a long time, but they haven't been used in recent years. They were potentially going to get used for the Constellation program, but that was, of course, cancelled. 15 years later, they've decayed further, and it was decided that they had to be removed. From test stands coming down to satellites coming down, SpaceX is going to be dropping 4,500 of its Starlink satellites, but don't worry, they're only dropping them by about 70 kilometers in their orbits in 2026. So this is going to be a constellation reconfigure, which is supposed to track the current level of solar activity, right? So I think the idea is that as the sun sort of fades away from its peak, activity, the atmosphere of the Earth is going to shrink back in. And they want to drop the satellites down so that they're going to experience more atmospheric drag should there be a failure. So a satellite which is damaged will decay any reasonable amount of time. And we actually had an issue where a SpaceX Starlink satellite apparently had some sort of collision. It generated a small amount of debris and it is now dead in space and decaying. It looks like it's relatively intact, but we don't know exactly what caused it. So anyway, SpaceX reconfiguring Starlink so that it will be more resilient, so that if there is a problem, the spacecraft will come home more quickly and more controllably. Now, go over to Europe. ESA, hot off the heels of getting the biggest budget in its history, has now announced the biggest data breach in its history. Apparently, some hackers claiming the alias 888 have acquired more than 200 gigabytes of data, including all sorts of potentially sensitive information about people and science. It's for sale on breach forums. But that the announcement of this breach is sort of required by law so that if you're potentially affected, you don't get blindsided by this. And now back over the pond to Florida, to the Kennedy Space Center, NASA. SLS for Artemis 2 is ready to start moving, and it's going to start moving very slowly on its crawler out of the vehicle assembly building to its launch pad. So the official move date is supposed to be the 17th of January. And that, unfortunately, I got an invite to be there, or I got asked if I wanted to be there. I signed up and everything. And January 17th is when the Astro Awards are happening. In fact, if this thing goes on schedule, which is by no means guaranteed, I will be on stage with Eric Berger and Laurie Garver discussing Artemis while they are rolling out Artemis. Okay, but anyway, yeah, I'm at Astro Awards this weekend. If you're interested, I'll be on all the panels. We will be, you know, answering questions, talking about spaceflight, be doing the meets and greets, and of course, I'll be playing some DJ sets with some awesome music. So, you know, check that out. If you're going to be in Austin, tickets are still on sale. I believe there's some tickets left if you're interested. Of course, I get free stickers and stuff if you come and you tell me that you've seen this. But anyway, yeah, Artemis 2, we also have a set of potential launch dates for it. These are, of course, based on the launch windows that are required for the free return trajectory to bring it back. They're going to swing around the moon and come back. And by the way, when they're on the far side of the moon, I believe they're going to be further away from Earth than any mission in human history. So that'll be another sort of record set by NASA. But yeah, all of these launch opportunities are pretty much at night. There's a couple that are very close to sunrise or sunset. But again, we are going to be marveling at how the SLS is the brightest rocket in history. It's not the most powerful anymore. Elsewhere at NASA, Jared, of course, is settling into his job. He is working exceptionally hard. He is touring various NASA facilities because he said he would do this. He said he would go around and talk to the people, discuss, you know, how we unleash NASA's innovation, how to get away from the bureaucracy that's potentially slowing NASA down. So he's started out by visiting Goddard and Langley. And I find it interesting, the ones he started at are the ones which appear to have been the most affected by proposed cuts. Another thing that he's done is that he flew his trio of F-5s across the country from Reno to the Kennedy Space Center. So yeah, this was like a weekend jaunt in the new year. Him and a bunch of buddies flew up to Reno, and unlike, well, what everyone else does in Reno is gamble, I guess. He picked up his F-5s and then flew them over the weekend all the way to Kennedy, landing at the, of course, the Space Shuttle Landing Facility at the Kennedy Space Center. And I think, as far as I know, he's probably only second NASA administrator actually do this. The first NASA administrator I know that definitely landed as an aircraft at the Space Shuttle Landing Facility was, of course, Charles Bolden, who was flying the Space Shuttle and landed it there, I think, on STS-60. But anyway, yeah, there's also been some news stories about how Jared is looking into ways of satisfying that ridiculous Texas Space Shuttle request without actually taking a space shuttle from the Smithsonian. One thing that was discussed is giving an Orion spacecraft, since there's going to be one coming or flying around the moon and potentially coming back. That might be a nice thing to go to Houston. Another even higher profile individual in the government that's going on tour is Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, who has been visiting all sorts of defense contractors, including US rocket companies, on his Arsenal of Freedom tour. So this is aimed at defense contractors to say, we want you to invest in production rather than investing in making more money for your shareholders, which I'm sort of on board with, right? But yeah, he visited Rocket Lab in LA, and he also visited SpaceX a day in Boca Chica, and apparently they did a live stream. I have not had time to watch that, but I gather that Elon Musk and all that would have been there. In the old space world, L3Harris are going to sell their majority stake in their space propulsion unit, which basically includes Aerojet Rocketdyne, which they have acquired. So they're going to sell most of that to another company, I believe, which, you know, it really just shows how Aerojet Rocketdyne have gone from being the place to buy all the engines in the US to being almost irrelevant. Now, apparently one thing that is excluded from this are the RS-25 engines for SLS. I'm not sure if the RL-10 engine is included in this, but also they sell things like solid rocket motors, which are used by ULA. And these solid rocket motors are also potentially used for missile design. The US Space Force is developing plans for a new super heavy rocket launch facility at Vandenberg Space Force Base. Now, this is the old Slick 14, which is down on the South Base, and they want to retool this to accommodate new large heavy rockets like Starship or potentially New Glenn, you know, from Blue Origin. So they're looking to see anyone's interest in developing this, what sort of infrastructure support they would need, and of course, how much investment they would make, right? But this is, of course, important because right now we still don't have any plans for a West Coast launch site for either of those rockets, and both either of those would fit the bill. and SpaceX has received a whole bunch of new contracts from the Department of Defense. A total of $739 million in new task orders for the Phase 3 Lane 1 of the National Security Space Launch Program. So this is like, I think it's something like 9 launches over the next couple of years. If Lane 1 is the sort of high risk version, like the, you know, these are for things where if the mission fails, it's not such a big deal, but they basically ran a clean sweep against potential competitors, which included like Stoke Space and Rocket Lab, who are allowed to bid. These launchers are going to start late 2026, go on until 2028. These are going to be things like missile tracking satellites and, you know, spy satellites, reconnaissance satellites. And last week, at the American Astronomical Society meeting, Schmidt Sciences, which is a foundation set up by billionaire Eric and Wendy Schmidt, Eric, of course, was the first CEO at Google, they basically announced one of the biggest private investments in astronomy funding. This included 3 amazing Earthside telescope arrays, but also an orbiting observatory, which is larger than NASA's Hubble Space Telescope, right? So this is wild. First of all, the ground-based observatories are going to be like the Deep Synoptic Array, which is going to be a radio dish, small radio dishes, thousands of them, well, over 1,000 of them, closely packed together to perform and do interferometry. There's going to be the Argus Array, which is going to use smaller optical telescopes. Looking skyward, they'll record like non-stop information on rapidly changing objects. This will be in Texas. There's also the Large Fiber Array Spectroscopic Telescope, or LFAST, which will be a bunch of small, like, you know, 2.5 feet mirrors, which will feed their stuff to a central place for analysis and spectroscopy. But the space telescope, that's what you're all interested in. This is the Lazuli Space Observatory. This is going to have a 3.1 meter mirror, as opposed to Hubble's 2.4 meter mirror. So that'll give it about 70% more collecting area. And it will also, of course, have a whole bunch of new modernized sensors, which will enable it to see stuff that perhaps is beyond the capabilities of Hubble. Also, it's going to be in a 3-to-1 lunar resonance orbit, which means it's going to be a fairly long way away from Earth. It's not going to have its pointing restricted to, you know, making sure that it can't point at the objects near Earth. So it will be much more flexible, gather more light, and be more capable than Hubble. And then there's a really odd story going around about a company called TGV Space. This is two guys in a van. That's literally what it's called. The name is a pun on. The idea is if you are lean and mean, you can make a profitable space company. They were founded back in like 1999. They've been around, they've tested rocket engines at NASA. In fact, they're still testing rocket engines at Huntsville if you check their LinkedIn. But their main source of income has been SBIR grants, Small Business Innovation Research. The idea is, you know, you get a bit of money to develop something, do the proof of concepts, maybe write some papers, and that could potentially turn into a business opportunity, but a lot of the time these things don't. That's the whole point. It's like a bit like venture capital, but with more homework, right? And they're doing this work for the DoD. So anyway, their primary business address is essentially a residential address in Washington. So yes, some blogger, video maker decided that this is suspicious and said that this is an example of government fraud. I've been asked by a couple of people about this particular story, so I figured I'd better put that in there. It seems in this case to be highly unlikely. At TGV Space, I've had a lot of well-known people like vouching for their honesty and integrity. People like Dave Mastin, you know, who is by no means some liberal. Anyway, finally, Y Combinator. They are the people, of course, that have been putting up a lot of the venture capital funding for things like space data centers. Well, the latest class of companies to come out, one stood out that I had to mention. This is GRU Space, Galactic Resource Utilization Space Incorporated. They want to put a hotel on the moon. And the people that are involved as founders are all relatively qualified and know exactly how hard this is. This isn't some MBA that's come in and said, we should put a hotel on the moon. No, this is people that are like, they have been working their entire life in space and they say, we think it should be possible to put a hotel on the moon. It's going to be hard. We're going to need a lot of money. We know what problems we need to solve. I think there's a pretty good chance that this ultimately goes nowhere, but I so want them to succeed because this is the future I want to live in. I want to live in the future where I can go to the moon and jump around in 1/6 gravity, because by that point I will probably be old and getting away from Earth's gravity might feel like good for a little while. So that's the news. We're expecting, of course, to see Crew 11 come back in the next few days. I hope everyone's going to be all right. Pay attention if you're on the West Coast on Wednesday night. I'm Scott Manley. Fly safe.